Hi folks, Leah here. Just letting you know today's podcast comes with a content warning. Please check the notes for more details.
Hi, I'm Leah.
And I'm Brie.
And welcome to the Bad Taste Book Club.
The spooky edition.
So today's book is The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires.
By Grady Hendrix.
I would say if you are not a true blue horror reader, this might not be your first dip.
This is a horrific, it's a horror vampire book. The vampire is a monster and there is just awful stuff all around it.
But is he still bi?
Yeah, probably. He's been around for a while. I don't know. There was that weird flashback to the World War II, like maybe he had some buddies, like I'm sure.
So, what do you know about Grady Hendrix?
So, I came across Grady Hendrix because a horror podcast I really like recommended My Best Friend's Exorcism. And it sounded like a magnificent book. And I checked it out and I kind of just fell in love with Grady Hendrix's writing. As far as, like, contemporary horror writers, he tends to specialise in slightly absurd premises that are still terrifying as much as the premise seems comedic. His other background is he's quite well known for a book called Paperbacks from Hell, which is a history of your pulpy paperbacks from the 70s and the 80s. So that's sort of my background and what I know of the writer. Yeah, I follow him on Twitter, seems like a real cool guy.
And I was so surprised that this was written by a dude. In fact, I went to his Wikipedia page to make sure it was a guy because he writes women extremely well.
Absolutely. And I have read most of his books at this stage and they're pretty much all female protagonists and they're really good ones.
I don't even know what any of these people look like, which is very weird.
Which is kind of great. I am notorious for just not remembering what characters are supposed to look like, so if an author doesn't spend any time on it, it's ideal for me.
The only thing we really know about the main four ladies is that they're very white.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so let's go into our people.
So with the characters, we have our five book club ladies, Patricia being our main character. She's very much a stereotypical bored housewife. Like, she had a life before she got married, but it's kind of gone.
Yeah, she's got two kids who she loves, but is not a particularly great parent to.
Yeah, she just doesn't quite get how to parent properly. Yeah. Like, she's trying her best.
We've got Grace, who is the perfect housewife, and in fact, at one point, tells Patricia to get over something by vacuuming her curtains, which, buddy.
Look, no one does it enough, okay? Yeah, so Grace is definitely your Stepford housewife. She always keeps up appearances. She knows everything that's going on in the neighborhood. She has a notebook. I love Grace. She is definitely one of my faves.
We've got Slick, who is very religious.
She's your God-fearing housewife. She's also very, like, socially awkward and, like, just sort of steamrolls into situations. She's not very good at actually doing the decorum.
Yes, she wants to be, though. You can tell that is, like, it's her heart of hearts to be one of these society ladies. Then there's Mary Ellen, who has a cop husband and is a feminist, which is the first thing you learn about her from Patricia, which I think tells you a lot about Patricia as well.
Yeah, Mary Ellen is from the big city and she's now moved to the suburbs, so she's shaking things up.
She wears pants sometimes to church.
Oh, scandalous. The final member of our book club is Kitty, who is one of those big personalities with five kids, a shambling house, and a dumb husband.
She's a hot mess, and I love her for it.
She is pretty great. This forms, like, our book club in the title. There are a group of women who end up having a not-a-book club where they read true crime together and drink wine.
I really liked the beginning of this where they're at one of those very serious book clubs where they talk about serious literature books and nobody has read the book, and it just made me happy.
It's such a mood. I'm so bad at reading the great literature classics. Yeah, so that's our book club. We've got some other significant supporting characters. I think the first one to start with is Mrs. Green, or Ursula Green. She comes in as a nurse and an aged care worker and also a housemaid for Patricia when she's lumped with her mother-in-law who's got dementia and isn't well.
So that's Miss Mary, who is Patricia's husband's mother. Patricia's husband is a fucking horrible human being who, if was a real person, I'd want to bury them in the ground. possibly why still alive.
I mean, fair. The husbands are terrible in this book, guys. They may be the real villain.
Questionably, but yes, they're definitely fucking up there. Oh my gosh, he annoyed me so much.
Miss Green is like probably for the second half, I'd say she's the other driving force of the narrative, because she knows what's up. She also becomes our window into the different neighborhoods and the different like segregation of the neighborhoods, because she is a black woman who lives in the lower socioeconomic black neighborhood.
So yeah, there's the suburb, and then there's the suburb over, which is where all the black people who do all the work for the white people live, where things are going wrong basically from the very beginning of the book. But because this is white people, they don't care about that, really. It's not important to them, and they think that if there are problems, it's caused by the people living there and has nothing to do with them.
Yeah, so this book is set in the 90s, so at one point Kitty is very sure that the reason why Mrs. Green is worried about her children living in this neighborhood is definitely because of the super predators.
Yes, it's set in the 90s, and it's so well set in the 90s. Like, we grew up in the 90s-ish, and it just sits in its place and time so nicely.
Yeah, place and time is something I've found Grady Hendrix does very well. The first, like, I'd say quarter at least of the book is just setting the mood and the relationships before things start to go down.
Yeah.
And it does it so well, because you have, like, the establishment of the book club, and then you have the scenario where Patricia is dumped with her, like, mother-in-law, and it's so clear that the mother-in-law is not able to live alone. So now it's Patricia's job to run the household and care for a woman who is really, like, struggling in her older age. When she's so overwhelmed, all her friends just come and, like, have her back. It's so good.
I think one of the big sort of themes of this is women doing the things that are invisible to a lot of men. So yeah, socially supporting each other and looking after old people and young. So Patricia has two kids. She's got Blue, who's 6, and Corey, who's going into teenhood. I think she's 12 at the beginning, and because there's a time jump, she's 15-ish by the end. And so it's all about, like, the work that goes into running a household and at the very beginning, and how exhausting that is to do, especially when nobody seems to care that is an actual job.
Yeah, because Patricia's husband Carter is a very serious doctor man who has very serious priorities and is always working late, and just leaving her to run the household and raise the kids on her own, and like, that's a lot of fucking work.
Yes.
Do we bring up our vamp?
This is kind of a spoiler, but not really, because you clock him within seconds.
As a reader, you know immediately that this is the character we're setting up as a vampire.
So that is James Harris.
The newcomer to the neighbourhood.
He's very handsome.
Not at first, though. He looks dead the first time.
Right, yeah. I think she plays it off as, oh, he must have been hungover or on drugs or something like that. But you can tell that Patricia, from the very beginning, kind of has a semi-crush on him. Her husband doesn't treat her very well. And this man who's just come in is very polite and kind, and sort of, like, she invites him to their book club, which is very much just for women, because he is interested in her. And I think it's one of those things, like, he clearly love bombs her and is sort of like, oh yes, this is very interesting. Tell me about all the things you care about.
Yeah, he wants to hear about her book club, and her husband never does. Yeah. So, like, I think at some point her husband describes her book club as, like, just reading morbid trash.
Which, to be fair, it kind of is, but that can be fun.
He is the white man who's come in from town, and everyone's deeply suspicious at first. But he has an alibi. He's here to look after his unwell great aunt. And then he sort of just embeds himself into the community. So that's sort of our main cast of characters. We've got other people popping up throughout, but these are the ones we hang around with the most.
And I mean, the husbands pay a small amount. Carter's the one that you really need to know about, because he's kind of the instigator of all the shit stuff that the husbands do, I'd say. Because he's a psychologist, and obviously he knows when people are having a bad time.
And because he's Patricia's husband, we don't really see as much of the other husbands and wives and their relationships, but we see tons of his with Patricia.
Yeah.
Generally, the plot sort of goes, new guy comes into town, some things go wrong, And ladies have to get some shit done.
And this book does a very good job of making things go slightly wrong for a long time before everything goes very, very wrong very quickly. And it's a really good build-up.
Yeah, and it does that thing which all good horror should, where, like, yes, you have this supernatural menace in the society, but the thing enabling the supernatural menace and the real horror are all really grounded realities.
Yes.
And the book effectively uses our supernatural menace as a way to tease out and explore these really unpleasant things that exist within society.
This is the horror of the suburbs. It's about why are people ignoring bad things happening. It's about husbands mistreating wives.
It's about the invisibility of women, and it's also about what happens when men take over and destroy female spaces in a lot of ways, because the evolution of the book club as the book progresses, as James Harris embeds himself more and more into the community, it just completely, it loses all the connection that these
and
women
joy,
have.
Yeah. I have to say, I feel the same way as Patricia does about James Patterson, having read one of his books.
How did you like the sections broken up by books and, like, how the themes sort of came together?
There are a couple of books that I didn't know of, but for the ones that I knew, I was like, hey, I see where you're going with that.
I mostly knew the true crime stuff.
Yes, that's the same as me.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the majority of them are true crime to some extent.
I've never read Bridges of Madison County, and I don't plan to. I did think that particularly The Stranger Beside Me was a perfect pick.
Especially because that is definitely the bit where James Harris begins to embed himself in the community. And it's just to have these women sitting here reading a book about someone who's right next to you being a serial killer.
Yes.
While they're dealing with this intruder is just very good.
And I think it goes to show social blindness as well. And in fact, Grace, the super housewife, has a line really late in the book that I love. In choosing between something that she didn't like and not making a fuss, Grace did something she didn't like. And I think that shows how important not causing drama is in these circles.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the big theme you're probably getting through this is, like, this is a suburban horror. This is the things that happen when you're too focused on keeping up appearances. It's also a lot about the corruption of wealth, because so much of how James embeds himself in the community is by giving all these families access to this perceived wealth. That's how Patricia gets hooked.
I think it's important to note that it's not even wealth, it's the illusion of wealth.
Like, absolutely.
A lot of what happens is largely imaginary, and everybody thinks that they're doing super well, but it's all a facade, which I think is a big part of the story. It's about facades and how often they come between you and actually living a good life.
Absolutely, because it's not one of those things where they're getting cash immediately. It's them making good investments, which they will see high returns.
And I think as well, like, one of the other big themes are, other than women love true crime.
Yeah, so I love the fact that the book club that lasts is the true crime one.
Yes.
It's true crime and horror for the most part.
Yes. And I think, again, it goes back to that sort of, like, this is women's lived experience, and why I think it's so wild this is written by a man, because he must have talked to a lot of women and believe a lot of women to be able to write women this well.
Yeah, it's quite impressive for a male author to pull that off. I guess the other thing that really pops up is systematic racism.
Yeah, and look, we're two white people, so we're not going to be the best people to talk about this, but
it's a huge plot point.
And I think the main thing to point out is that until James starts attacking white people, it's kind of a free-for-all for him. He can do whatever the fuck he likes as long as he's in the black suburbs.
Yeah, you have things looking at when black children are being harmed, who gets looked at first? The family.
Yes, and in fact, one of the characters gets a black kid taken away from her parents accidentally because she expects that the government will behave fairly.
Yeah, and that's such a really telling scene, because there's also a bit in the same scene where she's worried about her husband being in this woman's house, which is effectively a trailer.
Yes.
And she's like, no, my husband grew up poor. He'll understand that this isn't the situation. But the reality is, it's not just a class issue, it's a race issue too.
Yes.
He walks into that trailer and he doesn't just see a poor person, he sees a poor black person.
Yeah, and it's very clear that her husband in particular doesn't want to make ways for a black kid, essentially.
No, his opportunity to succeed and get a promotion is explicitly weighed more than this mother and her child.
And not to let the white women off, Patricia wants to go to bat but is very easily convinced not to, and none of the other people in the book club particularly care about the matter and think that it's probably, yeah, it probably was someone that the mother knew and the child was probably better off.
Patricia herself is just like, after Mrs. Green like sacrifices her body effectively for her mother-in-law, like it takes her weeks upon weeks to even go visit her and say thank you. Like,
yes.
She is just, Patricia is absolutely and explicitly part of the problem.
Yeah. And I think as well, her guilt is more important than Ursula's comfort. Yeah, like, no shit. Her comfort should be more important than your guilt.
Yeah, this is definitely pretty explicit when it talks about, like, the themes of race. Whether or not it's the best handled, I think we need to look to, like black readers, effectively, yes, and see what they say on that.
And I think, again, like, yeah, we're white readers and the author is a white man, but from the perspective of white readers, like, thinking about your own racism, I think it does a pretty good job of explicitly being like, no, you can be part of the problem. So, like, from that perspective, I think it does a good job.
It definitely doesn't hold any punches.
No.
For you when you're reading this, which I think is quite important. What did you think about the way it handled the horror of aging?
Yeah, so Miss Mary is the mother-in-law of Patricia, and it's really sad because you can tell that she was this vibrant person who had opinions and was very outspoken previously, and now she's kind of relegated to being a problem. It just kind of upset me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, the whole arc around Miss Mary hit me really hard. All the sons don't want to have her there. It's just, like, she has three kids.
Yeah, and it's pretty explicit that if Patricia wasn't there for Carter, Carter would probably have put her in a home.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, for
no
all
way.
That he protests that it would be terrible, he only can do that because Patricia is a competent housewife who will, like, not complain too much about having to look after her.
And oh my gosh, there is absolutely an essay to be written about how when older relatives or parents get, like, older and do need care, the assumption is always that the daughters will look after it. Every time.
Yes. But, and I think that's the other huge theme of this is, like, the importance and degradation of women's work. Like, there's so much that goes on that is explicitly written out in this book that is largely invisible in society, and I think it does an excellent job of highlighting how much emotional and physical labor goes into being a family, which is largely put on women.
Yeah, it also does a really good job of taking all the negative stereotypes about housewives, and most of them start to become like a plot driving point that gets them to the next point. Like, Grace is a really great example of that, with her being the nosy housewife who just goes around with, like, a baked good when new people enter the neighborhood and gets all the details. And,
oh,
like,
that
facilitates them. That is exactly the person Patricia embodies when she first goes in to investigate what the deal with James is.
Yeah.
That is, like, it is Grace's little notebook of all the different cars that she's not familiar with that go down the street that allows Patricia to link that to the situation in Miss Green's town. It's this very negative stereotype of the nosy, fastidious housewife. That is the aspect that gets them over the line.
Yes, and, like, cleaning comes up a couple of times.
So many times.
Where the ability to clean very well is really important to the plot, and it just, I don't know, it made me really happy because those are things that people, yeah, need to know how to do, and to see them used in a important way rather than just a humdrum daily grind way was really lovely, she says as she thinks about how horrifying this book was.
the horror is wild. Do we want to have a quick run through of the most evocative scenes for you in terms of that?
Oh, okay. There's one scene at the very beginning with Miss Mary and some rats.
Oh, the rat scene is so... This is another thing the book does really well. If you know your vampire lore, you know what is going on.
Yes.
And this, like, this is an ideal book of someone like me who's read too many books about vampires, because...
Can you read too many books about vampires?
Possibly. I do regret that most recent Anne Rice one. Oh, it's so grotesque.
So that's gross. There's also, like, in that particular scene, a dog gets bitten by the rats, and I will say, at this point, I had to stop reading for a day or more. If the dog had died, the dog does survive the rats.
The dog does pretty good. Like, yes. The dog does well.
I was like, you better not kill that dog. Like, because they're talking about the dog, and I'm like, that dog better not die right now. I cannot deal with that. I also think, like, the first sign that something is going wrong is when Patricia walks outside to put the bins out, and she meets the great aunt of James, and Patricia thinks that she's having a senior moment in the same way that Miss Mary does, and is kind of goes up to her and is sort of like, can I help you? Your house is this way, and is trying to do the right thing and gets bitten on the ear. Like, she gets full on attacked by this old lady who has like feral strength and gets like half her ear bitten off, and it's real creepy.
Oh, it's so visceral and just,
yeah.
Ugh.
And it's such a good like first hit of, oh fuck,
something is rotten in the heart of Denmark.
Yes. And the other one is the cockroaches. So a cockroach goes into a person's ear and gets squished in there, and I almost wanted to throw up.
I also almost wanted to throw up. God, ooh. The tension was overwhelming, and to add that, ooh.
Yeah, so this was a book that I actually had to read over a couple of days. One, because Carter needs to die, and also because there is a lot of tension, so it's not really a fun summertime read.
Unless you're me.
Unless you're Brie.
It was really good.
It is so good. Like, don't let me put you off reading it if it sounds like something you like, because even though horror is not my jam particularly, I really enjoyed this book.
Oh, it was just so extremely good. How did you like the vampire as the monster?
He did a really good job of making the vampire monstrous in a genre that often has vampires as sort of Byronic heroes.
I also like the fact that it's never entirely clear what aspects are accurate and what isn't. The rat's moment hints at the possibility, yes, that he can control like creatures of the night, which is a Dracula thing. And then there's like the invitation thing, which pops up a,
yes,
lot. But it's never explicitly stated if that is actually a reality or not. We just infer it from the text.
I think the big thing though was the blood sucking. I guess, like, that's the aspect. He's a parasite. He's a parasite in everything that he does. He latches onto their book group and makes it all about him, and he latches onto their lives and you know, in their finances and sucks them dry. Yeah, he's a very clearly a parasite and a monster, and the only way he gets through the world is because he's so good at fitting in.
Did your copy of the book have the prologue from Grady Hendrix about why he wrote the book?
I don't know that it did, actually.
It was really interesting because he sort of said, like, this is the companion book to My Best Friend's Exorcism. It's about the women who are just burdened with nothing but obligation, trying to do the best they can in a world that's just against them, versus a creature who is no obligation and no ties,
yes,
and can just entirely act on impulse with no thought for anyone else. Do we want to get into the spoilery talk?
Yeah, so spoilers, and also, again, really hard on that trigger warning, because it's a lot to read and it's probably going to be a lot to listen to. Let's go through the plot a little bit. First third, which is the build-up, and then Patricia finds James biting a girl in a van on the thigh, like upper thigh.
He's one of those vampires who's like, no, the neck is too cliche. I must do the inner thigh, the sexy thing. But the way he feeds is the least sexy thing in the world.
She reports it to the police. She thinks that the police are there to help. They are very much not. It ends up with her having to go on meds at her husband's behest.
So, yeah, it's, when she sees this, she's like, there's definitely something in. So she drags her entire book club along for the ride with her, and they all agree that they'll talk to Mary Allen's husband.
Yes, the cop.
About it. And unbeknownst to them, James Harris has become best buds with all their husbands while they weren't looking.
Yeah, in fact, that day, I think they all, the men all go off to the yacht club for drinks and to have a manly chat with this James Harris.
So the men pretty much turn around and take everything away from the wives at that point. Everyone's life sort of gets unraveled, especially Patricia, because her husband's like, you're clearly having a harder time than I thought. Let me give you some antidepressants.
Yeah, so he gives her Prozac. It also comes out at this time that Grace is the perfect housewife, not because that's particularly her inclination, perhaps, but because her husband is abusive.
Yeah, her compulsive cleaning is just her trying to take control of the one thing she can in her life. Yeah, so, like, that's the point where everything just kind of unravels and we see all these holes in everyone's life. Like, Kitty is going broke because her stupid husband is gambling the money away.
Yes.
Patricia is just not coping because she's effectively being gaslit. And her husband has effectively told her children not to listen to what she says. And I think that's the breaking point for her.
Yes, for sure.
And she overdoses on her pills.
Which her husband basically says that, like, because she did that, everything in their life is going to be worse.
And then he effectively just puts her in a position where her children will never trust her again.
Yes! This was my first rage quit, because this is where they decide to do a 3-year time skip. And I was like, what the fuck? 3 years?
Yeah, I like the time skip though, because it means we don't see all the shit that broke her down into compliance.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, imagine, like, we just make the assumption. So the time skip is pretty much everyone's prospering in the old village. Everyone's doing real good on paper, at least.
Patricia's kids are
struggling,
and you can see that the cracks in the relationships between the characters haven't so much been fixed as papered over. The beginning of the second part of the book is the new and improved book club, where all the men go as well.
That was James Harris's big request that the husbands pushed onto them, is that he was to be included in their book club. So he effectively demands access to a female space. And the husbands seem to think they have control over that space, which they don't.
But the books they pick are those shoot 'em up.
And the whole town's at the book club now. It's no longer a private thing. It's a big public event.
And nobody gets to be themselves in their book club, which was the big thing about the small, not a book club that they had at the beginning. It was a chance for women to be themselves for an hour a week, essentially. And so to make this a public display of how awesome they are sucks a lot.
And I think the use of the book club is such, like, the three different book clubs we see, the book club that is, like, too rigid and strict about perfect housewives becoming better perfect housewives, the not a book club that is about female solidarity and having those spaces, into this mass-produced public display book club.
Yeah.
It's like, it's such an interesting way of marking where the characters are at various points in the novel.
I really liked it.
So from there, like, the friendships are pretty much erased. I think Slick is still the one that's closest to Patricia, which is to Patricia's surprise.
Yeah, because Slick is the only one who came to see her when she was having a mental health breakdown.
Eventually, Patricia just wakes up and realises that
James Harris is obsessed with her kids in some ways. When Halloween comes around, Blue goes to hang out with James Harris. He runs away at one point and he goes to hang out with James Harris. And she is very clear in her mind, even now, after 3 years of being told that she's wrong, that there's something about James Harris and kids that shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, she can tell that there's some sort of grooming going on.
Yeah. Her husband's having affair after affair after affair, and the way that the story is told, it's not Patricia's id, which is very well aware of what's going on, but it's the part of her that's like, oh, the secretaries of all these people are ringing.
Then one day she gets a visit from Miss Mary, who says that he wants the kids.
Yes, and at that point she has to choose between saving her children and living the lie that she's been living for the last 3 years. And she picks her kids, because of course she does.
That's when she goes see Miss Green, and Miss Green is so not fucking happy to see her. So Mrs. Green has also had a visit from Miss Mary, and there's a photo of James Harris back when he was known as...
Hoyt Pickens.
Hoyt Pickens. And that kind of just... everything starts crumbling apart because he hasn't aged.
At this point, she goes to Slick, shows her the photo, and is like, so me and Ursula are going to go into his house and see if we can find some sort of evidence. She's cleaning his house, which, oh my gosh, how hardcore is Ursula Green?
Ursula Green is a fucking badass. She's the hero of this novel.
And she's very clearly the only person who has any moral authority in this entire book.
Yeah, the whole time that Patricia has been ignoring the reality of the world she's in, children have just been going missing at least one a year.
Yes, from the black community. Ursula Green has been keeping clips, has been keeping an eye on people. She sent her own children away so that... they wouldn't be taken, and it's obviously heartbreaking for her. Like, they're 2 hours away, she doesn't get to see them anywhere near as much as she'd like, but she puts their safety over her own comfort, which I think is real telling, because Patricia has put, well, all of the women have put other people's safety, like, below comfort.
Yeah, so they go to the house, and Slick never turns up after saying she would.
Patricia kind of doesn't even, at that point, notice that Slick has very clearly fucked her over. So what Slick wanted to do was run James Harris out of town, effectively making him somebody else's problem.
Yeah, that fails. He comes home.
Spectacularly. And this is where we get to, probably the creepiest section of... So this is where Patricia is hiding in the attic, which is filled with mice and cockroaches, and Patricia's skin being scratched by mice.
Yeah, and she's hiding there, and she can hear James Harris has come home early and is in the house.
And is looking for her, and does that sing-song, hears Johnny-like voice.
Patricia! It is the most tense thing. I can't even remember how she gets out of it. Like, not too long after it, we get another pretty horrific moment where Patricia goes to find Slick.
So Slick had rung up James and was trying to, like, scare him into skipping town. He wasn't scared. He, in fact, came to see her and raped her. I think it fits into this story, and I don't know if you could get rid of it, but...
Did it have to be there?
Yeah.
When this scene first happened, it's a horrific rape scene. It treats it with a fair bit of seriousness. I don't feel like it trivializes the scene, but there is a bit of, like, did we have to do this? And I definitely felt like a bit like that, did we have to do this? Until I realized what he was actually doing.
Yes.
Especially from, like, a vampire horror aficionado.
Yeah.
Effectively, when he rapes her, what he's actually doing is he's turning her. And yeah. That is so often subtextually a rape in novels.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably did need to be here, but I don't love it.
Yeah, I had really mixed feelings.
So what happens next is kind of subtextually a miscarriage, and then Slick is hostel bound for the majority of the rest of the book.
But still gets shit done. So from there, Slick kind of forces the group to come together. Not all the women are on board, but we do get there eventually, and we end up with, like, the final game plan, which I really like what the plan was and how well this went down.
Yes.
I just love, like, I love the fact that it wasn't as easy as, like, cutting off his head or just sticking a stake through. Like, they had to dismember every single fucking part of his body with the chainmail gloves and, like, the hunting gear from, like...
Yeah.
Oh, it was hard. It was bloody. It was brutal.
That's kind of the end of... The story is that they kill him in some ways.
Did you know there's a lot of blood involved when you dismember a still moving and living vampire?
And their husbands are coming home from the big football game.
And also, James Harris is one of those dickheads whose whole house is white.
There's a lot of cleaning up to do, but luckily these are women who have been cleaning up their entire lives.
Effectively what happens is Grace rocks up at the last minute and she's like, "You ladies have made a fucking mess." Yeah. And her and Miss Green stand together, and together they have 40 years worth of cleaning between them, and they're going to make this house fucking spotless.
But unfortunately, their lives cannot really go back to the way that they were.
Yeah.
So one of the very happiest things happens in this section of the book. Patricia tells Carter that she is going to divorce him.
Yes! Divorce!
The happy ending we were all... Well, actually, I wanted him to die. But the happy ending that we're all satisfied with. Slick dies.
And she explicitly asks for her remains to be cremated so she doesn't come back.
Yes.
The note that we end on is kind of like, the women carry on their life and their friendship remains intact one way or another. And the way that we know that is the book club's back.
Yeah.
And we hear about it because Patricia goes to Slick's grave and puts the book of the month there with a glass of wine and leaves that there and says thank you and goodbye. And then she makes sure that James Harris is in his fucking tomb.
All right, final thought.
I fucking love this book. If you're a horror reader, read it. Like, you will like it, especially if you like horrific vampires, because I know there's a big shortage. I really highly recommend this. I also recommend most of the other things Grady Hendrix has written, so, you know.
Definitely isn't, like, my genre of choice, but I do want another read another one of his books because it was just so well written. Even when I had to put it down, and I really did because Carter is the fucking worst. That's probably my final thought, is Carter can go to hell. On a sort of a scale of 1 to 5 vampires.
Definitely a 5 for me.
I'm gonna give it a 4 with the proviso that it is horror, and therefore if that is not your jam, probably don't read it.
Yeah, if you're not a horror person, please don't read this. Please don't. I've seen a lot of reviews that are just people like, this is really gross and disgusting and like unnecessarily graphic, and I'm like, it is a horror novel.
Yeah. All right, have a happy Halloween.
Spooky Halloween!
Now you can find us at some places.
That you can. So you can send us an email at badtastebookclub@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at badtastebookpod. We're on Tumblr at badtastebookclub, and we're also on Instagram at badtastebookclub. So give us a shout, let us know
that you're listening.
And like, did you like this book? Just pecoring naked across the rooftops of this suburban household.